Case number six is U.S. versus Collins. Mr. Anderson.
May it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Adam Collins. Since Mr. Collins was convicted of armed bank robbery and brandishing a firearm during a crime of violence. At sentencing, the Court departed upward from criminal history Category 3 to Category 5 based on Mr. Collins' prior juvenile adjudications, which were excluded from his criminal history score, uncharged acts, and the court's determination of how he allegedly committed his prior aggravated battery. This ended up being 34 months at the high end of the range. The court then departed by the same 34 months for the sentence on count two.
Now, Mr. Anderson, I have a fundamental question to ask you here, which is, in the post-Booker world, once the range itself has been calculated, we know that that needs to be done, you know, with attention to the various rules that the guidelines provide. Once we're in the world of what we would have called departures in the pre-Booker world, what difference does it make if Judge Hamilton thought, you know, a 34-month upward, I'll call it an adjustment just to avoid the vocabulary, on both of those counts was appropriate? I mean, he at this point is selecting a reasonable sentence. He's found out what the guideline range is. He's looked at this man's criminal history, and he thinks the guideline range isn't strict enough, and he thinks the reasonable sentence for your client is something that's 68 months longer. And so even though in a pre-Booker world, the kind of argument you're making about making sure the structure of the guidelines has been respected and all of that is exactly what we would have expected. Why does that still apply now that Booker has loosened the ties of the guidelines?
Because this isn't a post-Booker sentence. In fact, it was a pre-Blakely sentence.
It is a post-Booker sentence. We're here today. I mean,
but the sentence was not imposed post-Booker, is what I'm saying.
But all I'm saying is our review today is all these millions of Palladino remands that we've made suggests applies Booker. Sometimes we apply a plain error. Sometimes we apply it directly if somebody properly preserved the objection. But this sentence will ultimately be reviewed one way or the other with Booker in mind, I'll just say. You know, sometimes people waive the points. Sometimes, you know, the standards vary. But I don't see how at this point, when the ultimate issue for us is whether this is a reasonable sentence, we have to be quite so tethered to the way we used to depart from the guideline sentence.
Well, this court has still said that when there's guidelines error and the court relied on the guidelines when imposing the sentence, that's still grounds for reversal.
Absolutely, and that's guidelines error. So if in calculating the guideline range, the judge had failed to do something properly, had made an upward adjustment for something that shouldn't have been done or whatever. But departures were always different. Once you had the guideline range, then the district judge, I think as you point out in your brief, you know, would sit down and say, do I want to depart downward? Sometimes defendants would say this is too harsh and there was no reason why a downward departure wasn't possible, or there'd be a 5K motion or whatever. Sometimes judges would depart upward. But I'm very concerned with the question whether our old vocabulary of departures from a properly calculated guidelines range makes sense anymore.
It does when the district court was following that system, and departures were and, in fact, still are a part of guideline sentencing. Now, if the court were to say, you know, I'm not sure if this qualifies as a departure, but I'm just going to oppose a non-guideline sentence, that would be an entirely different situation.
But what's the difference, really? I mean, because the departure, the judge picks here on count one, which I understand you're not really challenging.
Actually, we are.
Okay, well, not as vociferously. Count one, he picks 34 months, and he at least ties that to guidelines methodology. He looks at the underrepresentation of criminal history in light of this guy's record, right?
Yes, but he used three grounds which were not permissible under the guidelines. The juvenile adjudications, which the Sentencing Commission has said those aren't included somebody's part of somebody's criminal history, and the court previously said if the Sentencing Commission specifically excluded something, it can't then be used to upwardly depart for underrepresentation. The court also didn't independently determine whether Mr. Collins committed the uncharged criminal acts, and it relied on apparently documents that wouldn't have been allowed under Shepard or this court's recent decision in United States v. Lewis to determine how he committed his prior aggravated battery.
Suppose Judge, I mean, obviously he wouldn't have done this at the time, but suppose Judge Hamilton, if this very case came up tomorrow, comes up with the guideline range and then says, I'm now going to look at 3553A and those factors, danger to the community, you know, and need for, you know, an appropriate punishment. And I think you need another 68 months on your sentence because you really have been incorrigible. Sometimes it's arrest, sometimes it's juvenile, but whatever. Is that an unreasonable sentence in your view?
That would depend on the process the judge followed, whether it would whether he relied on reliable evidence, which he didn't before. That would be a very big factor in the reasonableness, and also whether he considered the mitigating factors that he wasn't allowed to consider because they couldn't support a downward departure or even inform his decision on how much to upwardly depart because they weren't allowed to mitigate criminal history for.
So make all those arguments.
It may or may not be.
Okay, right. But it's conceivable that just using 3553A itself, maybe he's convinced it doesn't need to be another 100 months, but another 30 months wouldn't be enough, so he picks 68. And that could be a sentence he could choose if he went through the right process, had the right quality of evidence in front of him, listened to the mitigators, et cetera.
That is conceivable.
Okay.
But, of course, that's also conceivable in many of the other cases
right.
where this
I mean, I'm just getting at the point that obviously what he achieves under the old system through the upward departures, he could achieve under the new system with just a straightforward 3553A hearing.
He may be able to do that, yes. But we have no idea whether he would.
We don't know if he
would. Okay. When informed that his prior basis was improper, he may decide, well, yeah, the original sentence wasn't quite long enough, but you know, what I imposed was a little too long. Or he may go with the guideline sentence. We don't know.
Okay.
And, of course, there is, as Your Honor pointed out, the challenges to the sentence for count two based on giving two separate upward departures instead of just the one, and the Booker error that we've discussed. And I think I'm running into a little bit of my rebuttal time. And other than the specific factors for Mr. Collins, the Booker error is quite our argument is quite familiar to this court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenmaier.
May it please the court, my name is Todd Schellenberger. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of Indiana, and I represent the United States in this appeal. The United States is asking this court to make three rulings with regard to Mr. Collins' appeal. First, we're asking the court to deny Mr. Collins' request for full remand and resentencing in this case. Secondly, we're asking the court to find that limited remand is unnecessary in this case because Mr. Collins' substantial rights were not affected by sentencing under the pre-Booker mandatory sentencing guideline system. And finally, we're asking the court to affirm the sentence imposed by the district court in this case as it is a reasonable sentence given the nature and circumstances of this offense and given the history and characteristics of Mr. Collins, who has established a record of being an individual that is a violent repeat offender.
So basically, your main argument is that this case is Lee, not Palladino, because the district judge made it quite clear that he had discretion and he picks. I mean, there's nothing foreordained about the 68 months that he chooses to create the sentence he wants.
Yes, Your Honor. We are arguing that this case falls into the example given in the Lee opinion of a situation where limited remand would not be necessary because the district court obviously indicated that the individual would not receive a lesser sentence on remand because the court made an upward departure and gave a sound set of reasons for that departure, five reasons that are indicated in the record.
Now, would you agree that at this point we are reviewing this sentence, this overall sentence, for reasonableness? If there's no need for limited remand, I mean, of course, Booker is still the law. Are we reviewing this for reasonableness or something else?
Yes, I think once the court gets past the issue of denying full remand and deciding that this is not a limited remand case, it's a review for reasonableness of the sentence. And I think that the court can find this sentence reasonable. I'd like to make one point with regard to the request for full remand. I think that's a dangerous request for Mr. Collins to make at this point, particularly in light of this court's opinion in Goldberg, which I cited in my supplemental authority letter dated July 19th. In Goldberg, this court makes it very clear that after full remand, a defendant is exposed to a greater sentence than the one that was imposed under the mandatory guideline system. Just to quote one phrase out of the Goldberg opinion, the pre-Booker sentence is not the ceiling on the sentence. I think Mr. Collins is playing with fire when he asked his court to grant him full remand in his brief.
Although you, of course, are not representing him, so we will take that as maybe a friendly thought from the government, but...
That is correct, Your Honor.
if he thinks he would be better off, then presumably we should listen to him.
Mr. Collins' substantial rights could not have been affected by his sentencing under the mandatory guideline system unless he can establish that he would receive a greater sentence after remand. And this record makes it clear that Mr. Collins would receive either the same or a greater sentence on remand. Without an effect on his substantial rights, he has not established what is necessary for plain error in this case.
Now, do you think that what would have been the prior discussion about departure methodology continues to be relevant at this point, or do you think that we really should approach this, you know, let's say on the alternate legal ground of the 3553A process?
I think that it would be appropriate to review departures for reasonableness, and in the past it was necessary that they be linked to the guidelines. I think this court may consider reviewing departures for reasonableness and using linkage to the guidelines as a measure of the reasonableness of the departure. An alternative might be for the court to decide that it will evaluate the reasonableness of departures by linking them to the 3553A factors.
Dean seems to suggest something like the second. I mean, Dean says if you're going to sentence either above or below where the guidelines would have taken you, and in a sense, the further you go from the guidelines, the better your reasons have to be. The more thorough the explanation, the more evidence in the record. But you're suggesting maybe there's some intermediate step in there, which is to see whether you could somehow come up with this alternative sentence through linkage to the structure. It sounds very complicated, linkage to the structure of the guidelines.
Well, that was the standard prior to...
Right, I know, but now we're after. So
and just as today in evaluating the reasonableness of a sentence, if it was tied to the guidelines, that indicates that it is reasonable. It may even be presumptively reasonable. Oh. If the court were to take the steps to link a departure to the guidelines somehow, that would indeed, I think, be a measure of the reasonableness of the departure. It may not have to, but it could, and if it did, it would be useful to this court, I think, in evaluating the reasonableness of the departure.
Okay. Are you arguing in favor of a perpetuation of that rule post-Booker? Or are you indifferent to that?
I'm indifferent to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I think if the court takes that step, this court can use that in determining whether the departure was reasonable.
Okay.
Mr. Collins makes the point, and I think it suggests in his argument, that the juvenile convictions somehow can't be considered. The reason the juvenile adjudications in this case were not subject to the criminal history formula is that they were older than 5 years. And they were all barred under for calculation of the criminal history based on guideline section 4A1.2D. And if you read application note 8 of that guideline, it indicates that when such a timing out of those adjudications occurs, then the court might consider an upward departure. Likewise, guideline section 4A1.3 suggests that upward departures may be appropriate when a number of convictions did not count towards the guideline history category. Mr. Collins also raises the point that the upward departure with regard to count 2 was not linked to the guidelines. I just point out that it's difficult for a court to carefully link a departure on a 924C case to the guidelines when in a 924C case the sentence is a flat 7 years under the guidelines. It offers no guideline history category or offense level. So one is left with the question, how does a district court link a departure on a 924C case to the guidelines under those circumstances? And I think it was reasonable for this court to go back to the underlying offense, which did offer an offense level and a guideline history category, look at the number of months that it applying linking to the guidelines on count one that it chose to upward depart, and using the same number of months. And so with regard to that, I think the court did act reasonably. I would submit that the sentence is reasonable, that remand is not necessary in this case. I would ask the court to affirm. I'll answer any further questions the court may have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Anderson.
First off, already explained, full remand is most appropriate because the guideline errors are not harmless in this case. And, in fact, you should note that 4A1.3 is a specifically suggested departure under the guidelines, so it's hard to say that it's not part of the guideline structure. And, of course, there's the matter of Chapter 4 adjustments are supposed to be cumulative, not per count. And if linkage is the measure of reasonableness, then this sentence is clearly unreasonable since it wasn't properly linked. There are the mitigating circumstances which would justify at least a limited remand. Mr. Collins was severely abused and neglected by his mother. He had severe mental and emotional problems for much of his life. As a child and adolescent, he viewed himself as being unlovable and acted out to fulfill that self-image, resulting in many of the problems he got into. He heard voices and hallucinations since he was 6 years old. In the months prior to this offense, he appeared catatonic for hours at a time. Now, as a result of those, then he tried to self-medicate himself, which caused a substance abuse problem, too. The BOP psychiatrist said he suffered from major depression with psychotic features of paranoid schizophrenia, yet none of those things, lack of youthful guidance, or when the offense is violent, diminished capacity, were allowed to be considered either for downward departure or to mitigate criminal history. This court also found that childhood abuse generally is not adequate for departure. Lee didn't involve those mitigating factors which the court couldn't consider. Therefore, this case, unlike Lee, this court can't be sure what the district court would have done had it been allowed to fully give full consideration to those factors. So I think full remand would be most appropriate because of the guidelines errors requiring reversal. If this court disagrees, would you find the issue a limited remand under Palladino? And, of course, Mr. Collins has argued the sentence unreasonable as their final position. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the